This is Turning Towards Life with Justin and Lizzie. It is a Sunday in June at some point, and I know it's June because it's my birthday in June, and I'm going to be 40 next week, which is a bit shocking to me. And so I'm wondering about that at the moment and feeling into the fact that also it's already June and how quick this year has gone. It's very weird. And I'm very, very happy to be here today for our usual centering homecoming practice. And thank you for joining us and for following us. Maybe you're on Spotify, maybe you're on YouTube, maybe you're here on Facebook, maybe you're looking at our website, turningtowards.life. And we so appreciate you. And I just really appreciate you as well, that we turn up whatever we're doing and we're here together. And thank you, Justin, for choosing this lovely source this morning.
Good morning, everyone. Thanks, Lizzie. We're going to be talking about wanting the unwanted. And I was just remarking, Lizzie, on our arrival together this morning, all of a kerfuffle a couple of minutes beforehand with all the things that have been going on in our lives. And one of the things I really appreciate about us doing this is continuing even when things are messy in our lives and don't fit, you know, some pattern we might have imagined things have to be exactly this way. And here we are again and again and again. And I think part of what makes it possible is being able to do it that way, is keeping them coming without the conditions having to be perfect. So, well, good morning, everybody. I'm really, really glad to be doing this as well this morning. And this source, as we're going to do, as we've done it every week for hundreds of weeks, I have picked a source, some words this morning that can be the leaping off point for our conversation. And of course, Lizzie, you know this. I didn't really choose this. You chose this for me some weeks ago and sent it to me. And I'm just honouring your choice here by choosing it to bring it this week. And it is a poem by Jane Hirschfield called A Cedary Fragrance, which, for any of you who are new to this, if you ever want to find the poems or the sources we use, best place to look first is probably turningtowards.life. But if you haven't already joined our Facebook group, which is, you can just search for Turning Towards Life on Facebook. It's a private members group, so it's not publicly shared. You can join us live every Sunday morning. You can join in the really lovely conversation that goes on between people in the comments below each of the videos. And you can find the sources and loads of other stuff. So you're welcome to join us on either of those places. So this is short. This one, 9 short lines. And what I think maybe we should all do would help to listen to this is to see if you can, if you're in the middle of being caught up with something else, now might be a really good moment just to pause and to set aside whatever else it is that you were doing. And if you're out walking or something, just to maybe stop for a moment whilst Lizzie and I read this. So this is A Cedary Fragrance by Jane Hirschfield. Even now, decades after, I wash my face with cold water. Not for discipline, nor memory, nor the icy awakening slap, but to practice choosing to make the unwanted wanted.
Even now, decades after, I wash my face with cold water. Not for discipline, nor memory, nor the icy awakening slap, but to practice choosing, making the unwanted wanted.
When you sent this poem to me, Lizzie, it had such a huge impact on me. One of the things I know about Jane Hirschfield that's particular to her life that she's writing about here is that for a long time She was, maybe she still is, quite a serious practitioner of Zen Buddhism. And she used to go on retreats somewhere high up in the forests where there were cedar trees and all of this. Which gives some of the context to the poem, what she's writing about. But what I love about this poem is not that any of us have to have shared in that experience in order to, for it to reach us. To wonder about what we do purposefully, not for the sake of constraining ourselves in, not for the sake of some nostalgia, but for the sake of doing this hardest and most necessary thing in life, which is purposefully practicing making the unwanted wanted. Since I posted this into our Facebook group on Friday, I've been really musing on this, and a couple of things that have immediately become apparent to me. One is that a huge amount of what happens in life falls into this category of the unwanted. It wasn't what I chose. I didn't plan it to be this way. It wasn't in the schedule. It wasn't in my project plan. It's just happening. And we can have so many different orientations to it. And one thing I know in myself, and this is where I'm going to get onto the second part of what's occurring to me in a second. I know how easy it is for me to be in a relationship of in life if I don't want this. Mm. I didn't ask for this. It doesn't fit my self-image. It doesn't fit my story of myself. Mm. And how painful it is to stay in that relationship again and again and again for long periods of time. And this isn't the same, maybe we'll get to this later, this isn't the same as not wanting something, not wishing, not hoping, not wanting to, you know, giving up shaping the world in whatever way we can, but it's in what meets us now is so often going to be filled with so much that's unwanted. So there's the sort of stuff that happens, that's the first part that's been on my mind. But the second part that's also been really huge on my mind is how much of what, at least maybe, I don't think I'm the only one who relates to life this way unless I'm paying attention to it, how much of what's happening is also what's unwanted in myself. You know, we were unloading the dishwasher the other day, and the dishwasher's been a big theme, and I found myself saying something to Davina in a tone that I really felt ashamed of about dishwashers unloading, you know, how dishwashers were loaded and unloaded. And there's something unwanted in myself coming. So it's not just something that's happening. So immediately I can very quickly be in a relationship with myself of wanting to push away or abandon the part of myself that's spoken a way that I didn't like, and then the part of myself that's ashamed at speaking in the way I didn't like. And all of a sudden I'm in this double relationship of not wanting what's happening and not wanting what in myself is arising. And that's at least the way it occurs to me, is a big step out of my life very, very quickly. So I'm learning, partly with the help of this poem, that there's a different move, which is to start off by seeing what I can do to actually want what's here and have that be the starting place for everything else. And that requires an enormous amount of, it's a real practice, because I noticed it doesn't come automatically for me. I have to work diligently, consistently at this. It involves an awful lot of willingness to accept that life is happening as it is, rather than pretending that it isn't. That's the sort of the outer bit. And enormous kindness to the parts of myself that keep on showing up that I would otherwise banish, try and exile, and push away. last thing to say for now for me is the thing that I think is so, one of the things I think is so wonderful about Jane Hirschfeld's words is that she reminds us that to be able to do this requires practice. It's not something to expect ourselves to be able to summon in the moment. We really have to have ways that we can intentionally turn towards, keep on turning towards that which keeps on coming that we'd rather in that moment wasn't.
Mm. Yeah, it's really making me think, Justin, all the things that you're saying. And one other little category I can see for myself is that it's not only relating to things as unwanted, but that there's a way things happen that's unwanted. Like I've envisaged a way it's going to happen. And it happens, but the way it happens isn't the way that I think it should happen. So I think I have like a big streak of, I don't know, fantasism or idealism or something, where I think that a car journey of 4 hours is filled with some songs from Mary Poppins and some snacks and, you know, maybe some looking at some views or something. And then of course, like a real journey is filled with crying, frustration, me trying to breastfeed over a car seat on a motorway when I shouldn't be, and the screaming and the stopping in a car park where there's no public toilets open. And, you know, it's like the way things happen, I seem to build a relationship with it as to how I think it should be. And then the unwanted is the thing that is the reality of the situation rather than... And the piece that I don't want is the difference between my expectation and the real thing. And I notice that I can go through whole periods of time that I've projected onto an expectation, kind of complaining in my mind that they're not happening the way that I think they should be happening. Because some things are as short as, you know, to be honest, I'm not really a person for the dishwasher rules. So I'm normally breaking the dishwasher rules, as we've already identified. But you know, to use that as an example, I could be complaining that the dishwasher hasn't been loaded the way it should. And that's a small thing. But I could also be going through like a, I don't know, like a 2-week trip complaining that it's not the fantasy that I've had in my mind. And so my practice is, well, noticing this is one step. Noticing what I'm doing and then finding ways to appreciate what's here and to seek out beauty in the imperfection, the joy in the disastrousness, like see if I can find things that help me integrate my experience rather than just continue on the track of being displeased with it. And I also really identify, Justin, with this, the parts of myself being shown that are unwanted. And I feel like since you posted this poem, Justin, the thing that's arisen for me, and I'm not sure if I can really explain this very well right now, I'm going to have a go, is that sometimes, so particularly with Matthew, he does this kind of last minute preparations for things, which I find really difficult because it's a part of me that definitely exists, the part that procrastinates, the part that puts things off and does things right at the last minute under pressure and needs a bit of pressure to get myself going. It's a part of myself that I really don't like. And so when that, inside a marriage, you know, that thing that happens where it's like your identity becomes two people and one of them you can't control and one of them you can. So I take on the identity of like, well, what will people think if we're late? Because I think I've worked hard to not be a late person, for example, because of the image, the self-image that I want to portray that I'm not a late person. Somehow that's important to me and I haven't kind of unpicked it in terms of my self-image yet, exactly what that means. But I realize that in a relationship where there's some stuff that happens in your partnership that kind of drives you bonkers, it's like part of me gets shown to me that I don't want through Matthew. And then I have to kind of work with it, because it feels like it's like an acquired piece of identity, because it's not me who's being late. So I can hold it outside of me, but I know that if I get really honest with myself, it's part of me that's arising that I don't want, which is the part of me that's late is being shown to me, the part of me that's unorganized is being shown to me, the part, you know, whatever the thing is that's showing up. And of course, there's ways that Matthew's completely on time and organized and all of the things too. It's like, you know, it's in those moments, those kind of pressure moments, I guess, where I see this part of me coming up that I do everything I can to not be that. And then when it arises in Matthew, I try and make him not that too. And it's a real mess. And so I was kind of on the edge of my awareness of what if I could unpick this piece of my self-image, this self, what do you call it? Like when I'm trying to manage what people think of me, if I could allow myself to let go of managing that, maybe I could let this unwantedness be here without it turning me into someone who is trying to control other people's perception of me through having a tussle with Matthew about whether we're going to be late or not. And of course, people probably have this in all different kinds of ways, but this is just particular to me, of lateness being something that I think isn't respectful of people's time, it's not respectful of agreements, like all of that stuff comes up. And of course, like life happens and we've got a tiny baby, like it's going to happen and I'm going to have to deal with it and get used to it and integrate it and find the parts of me that arise when it happens. And so I really trust the curriculum, if you like. I trust that it happens and it's part of life and welcoming life. But it really does get me, and I feel like this poem is really helping me to see and be on the edge of something. I can't quite get it either, but I think there is a way I can drop some piece of my self-image and allow the unwanted to be here more fully. That would paradoxically just release it a bit rather than keep it all tightly bound.
You're bringing us into this kind of hall of mirrors phenomenon that happens between people, where we find that we imagine that what we don't want is something that's happening over there, but it turns out that what we also don't want is something that's happening over here in us at the same time. And then one of the things I really appreciate about what you're saying, Lizzie, is it shows that what might look like the simplistic response to the last line of Jane Hirschfield's poem is never going to be enough. So you could read this as that the work of making the unwanted wanted is simply to give up all of my, you know, give up all of your dislike of being late, set that aside. So in other words, banish another part of yourself in order to be accommodating and accepting towards Matthew that day being late. And that's never going to work. That if our learning to want the unwanted involves also setting aside the part of ourselves that doesn't want what's happening, we are then unwanting. Now, this is where the language gets tricky. But in a way, the way that I'm finding useful to talk about is exile. Is what do we exile in ourselves and in other people? And I was thinking, as you were talking about this, Lizzie, that the practice of learning to want the unwanted is always an and practice rather than an or practice. In other words, we have to, I was thinking as you were talking about this, about some of the ways I know that I get into exactly the same pattern, which is in other words, trying to sort of stop somebody else being a particular way in order that I can appear a particular way. And we can do it with our children, and we can do it with our partners, and we can do it with our colleagues, and we can, that the first move is to see if what we can do is we can say, I didn't want Matthew to be late. And then also to find it in ourselves to say, and I didn't want the part in myself that is late. And then to say, and I don't want the part in myself that is frustrated about our lateness, right? And to start to turn towards all of those and to go, this is what's here. But then at the same time, not to get into the binary move of only getting there because we push away the part that is upset to being able to say, there's also part of me that's upset about the situation, and there's also part of me that really wants to, I don't know what it is for you, it might be take care of other people by being on time, and there's also part of me that frankly just wants to keep an image going that I'm a together person and not flaky. And there's all, so the move for this to work out and not to be another form of pushing away of ourselves and pushing away life is really a move of including all of those. And I know what happens in me. So this is maybe something I learned very, very early on in my own bodily means of doing this, is mine is to go very, very, very quiet and effort very, very, very hard inside when I face the unwanted, particularly the unwanted me and other people. It's like, I remember when I was small holding my breath. I would, you know, you might find me in the corner holding my breath, like willing something to happen. And I can feel that that's the really easy thing for me to do, is to, and that I can, that when I'm not remembering Jane Hirschfield's invitation, I can go through large swathes of my life like that, tensed up inside, holding my breath, trying so, so hard to have myself and other people in life be just this one way, instead of learning to, in a way, to breathe out. And from there, then, of course, choose what is called for. So it seems so important to me to remember that making the unwanted wanted isn't an act of abandonment, of giving up. It's an act of engaging with what's here. It's what it really is. It's the practice of welcome.
Yeah.
This and this and this and this and this are all happening. Can I welcome all of them and from there respond in a way that's called for? That might be making how I'm feeling known, or it might be staying quiet and really helping someone else, or it might be making a request, or it might be just joining in to resolve something that is difficult and painful. But it's not the contraction away that I know, the bodily thing that I get into so quickly.
Yeah. It's really lovely, Justin. I was just reminding myself, as you were saying, you know, you were standing in the corner holding your breath. My tactic when I was little, the world was falling apart, was to work out what would break the spell of everybody's anger, rage, frustration, whatever I didn't like. And I would do something to make everybody laugh at just the wrong time in terms of what people were on a mission to be like. So I remember one time we were camping somewhere and everyone was arguing and, I don't know, people were spilling cornflakes in the, you know, it was like terrible. And so I just stood up and shouted as loud as I could, "Loose horse, loose horse." So everybody was like, "What? There's a horse," you know. And then everyone looked at me and then everyone just started laughing. And I remember this kind of relief coming over my body that I'd had some power to do something. That in that moment, everything that I didn't want went away because I did something. And I learned that, like, oh, so if I just do something like an interrupting humor move, this all goes away really, really quickly. So I remember learning that there was a way that I could stop the unwanted through doing something. And that image just arose to me when you were talking about holding your breath in the corner. And it's making me wonder now, like, I think I probably do that, you know, a lot now when there's a kerfuffle going on. Frequently it will erupt in me into like hysteria, and doing something to kind of stop it. And I know in my body it's like, there's a kind of a build-up of tension beyond a certain point. Like, I can't handle it. Like, I start to kind of break down or something. Like, my body starts feeling really, really weird. And I know I have to do something. And that's the move that I make. And I'm just curious, you know, we all make these different moves, as it were. Like, we do different things to dispel the unwanted, to kind of dissipate it somehow. And I also feel real compassion for those parts of us, you know, the part of you that holds your breath in the corner and the part of me that thinks I've got to interrupt all of this immediately because I can't tolerate it. It's too difficult for my system or whatever. And it makes me think as well how I know in that moment I was so narrow, and maybe you were also so narrow or constricted, like you were saying. And for me, the bodily practice of this is widening myself, like noticing my narrowness and seeing what it is to kind of inch myself wider by breathing and by opening myself to seeing if I can hold what's happening. And it's really difficult. You know, the other day, somebody really, a growing person, a teenage person, really, really screamed and shouted at me. And I felt myself going like, because it felt so difficult. It was so shocking to me. I didn't really understand what's going on either. And then as I just stayed there, and because it was for the sake of someone I really love, who happens to be in a teenage time, and it's really tricky, difficult, hormonal times, I breathed and I looked and I breathed and I looked and I breathed and I looked, and I managed to spread myself out again. Because I think that's the thing, when things feel traumatic, we have all of these innate responses. And, you know, I definitely know the parts of me that want to run, the parts of me that kind of go completely still and shocked, and the parts of me that want to fight back. And I feel like if I can notice those things and begin breathing and widening instead of this narrow pointiness that I become, I can do the things you were saying. You know, I can welcome the part of me that's feeling traumatized. I can welcome the part of this person that's shouting at me and see them in their wholeness too. I think that's the thing. It's like in that narrowness, my vision becomes narrow so that I would see the other part of somebody in its singularity rather than as part of the whole picture, which is that they're a baby, they might be hurting, they might have something going on in their life that I don't know about, they are innocent, you know, all these different things about human that get reduced to she's shouting at me. And I think breathing and letting my body widen in the moment, if I can catch it, enables me not only to, well, in order to welcome the unwanted, which is she's shouting at me, I have to be wide enough to see the whole picture. Mm. And to widen out into the wholeness of something in order to be with the part that's unwanted and then want it, and make it wanted.
Yeah. That's so beautifully said, Lizzie, that part of the trouble that we get into is that the something that's unwanted becomes the entire field of our vision.
Yeah.
And so with another person, it helps enormously to see if we can practice widening and widening to see that there's more here than the part that we don't want. And also, I want to keep on saying, and widening ourselves to be able to say, there's a part of me that really does not want this to be happen. I do not want to be being shouted at. And there might be something I can say or do here that's called for. And there are other parts of me that are able to be in this circumstance and able to welcome, so that we're huge as well. And maybe the place that this first starts being difficult for us is when we're very small and things are happening to us that we are beyond our capacity. We don't have the capacity to be wide in this way. And we learn, you know, and I learned to hold my breath, and you learn to defuse by making a big joke of something or distracting, you know, sort of making a distracting move. And there's wisdom in both of those, but not if they're the only thing that we keep on doing. And I was thinking about this as you were talking, because of course there's the person who's shouting at you, or there's the person who's being late, or all of that. And we keep on saying, this is not simply about just accepting it as it is without then getting on to what I want to do about it. But there's also the whole of life. So you know, I just turned 50 and you're just about to turn 40, and life is, and time keep on happening, and we can't do anything about time happening. I was feeling into this just this weekend, remembering what it was like, what I could remember of being 6 and what it was like to be 15 and what it was like to be 20 and and how at those times it felt to me like life would always be the way that it was. And now I'm 50 and life feels very different. Life is very different and I'm very different in so many ways. And I watch people around me who are 20, 30 years older than me now being old people. And I can feel that in me that doesn't want any of that, you know, that does not want time to keep going and does not want loss. And I'm finding out more and more that holding my breath and hoping that it wouldn't happen is unhelpful in regard to that as it is to the teenage person who's shouting, and that it's really helping to see that there's part of me that doesn't want that, and there's also many, many parts of me that really get that this is what makes all of life possible, that I wouldn't be here if this didn't keep on happening, if there wasn't time, none of us would be here. And so this is something that you brought to my attention when you sent me this poem. I'm missing this desperately at the moment because of the lockdown, that the swimming that I've been doing, particularly the winter swimming, has been part of my practice. When Jane Hirschfield talks about having practices where we can choose to make the unwanted wanted, I thought I was swimming because I love the water and it's amazing being outside and there's nothing like being there under the blue sky as the sun comes up and all of that. But a large part of what is happening for me when I get into water that's 4 or 5 degrees and I have to learn not to hold my breath and not to delay and not to sort of hang out in the changing room going, I don't really want to do this, but simply to get changed and go and get in the water and exhale as the super cold water meets me, is that I'm learning again and again how that I can make the unwanted wanted, because frankly, getting in really cold water is, there's always something that's unwanted about it. And also, Lizzie, that by doing it again and again, I also build capacity. Mm-hmm. So I can get in, I don't know if I can now, but I have to practice again because it's been a few months because of the lockdown. But when I found out that I could get into water that was 4.3 degrees and that I would still feel all the same feelings if I don't want to do this, but I could nevertheless do this, and that there would be something really beautiful about doing it,
yeah,
is helping me to see what it is that Jane Hirschfield is asking of us, is offering to us, is that it doesn't just come without our attention.
Yeah, it's really moving. I always, you know, when I saw that poem, obviously that's what I was thinking. It's like the kind of respect I have for your repeated and ongoing conscious wish to wake up, as it were. And for me, that's borne out in the way that you do your swimming, and that it's not going to be comfortable to do this. Like, we're not having a conversation about what it means to be perpetually comfortable. We're having a conversation about conscious uncomfortableness sometimes. Maybe development can also be comfortable, but there's an uncomfortableness to this which is waking us from a slumber. And if you like, our slumber is, our slumber can be a slumber that disagrees with what's happening all the time. And I think this is an invitation to waking up to what is happening rather than what we want to happen. And what if we can, as you know, you're mentioning growing older, Justin, you know, what if we can do the opposite of what often happens in life, where we get older and we kind of calcify and we become a kind of rigid version of ourselves, which I know has happened in various ways with the people who I know who are further on in their lives, is that everything becomes a little more tight and a little more, this is the way I want things. And what if we could do the opposite of that and loosen ourselves and loosen ourselves and loosen ourselves so that we can be freer in our old age rather than cantankerous, mean, you know, those kind of connotations of what it means to be really old and really determined and really cross. You know, I certainly have that from my own experience of the older people in my life, and being really forgiving about that. And, you know, it's fine. But I've got this image of us emerging in my mind of like really flexible old people, you know, who welcome and who listen and who say, "Oh, how interesting! Tell me more about that." Rather than, "Well, that's not how it happened when I was young," or something like the kind of the, those sayings that I've certainly heard again and again from the older people in my life. And I think the world needs that right now. I think the world needs us to listen and to be open and to say, "Tell me more, I'm curious. I might have opinions that exist already, but tell me some more, let me learn," rather than trying to keep the world the way that it was, which is clearly now being shown to us as very much not working. So I really appreciate that this is something that's not just in service of, you know, me having to deal with whether people think I'm a late person or not, but actually a much bigger reason, which is how to be a person that meets the world as it is, really as it is, and doesn't try and bend it into the way that I think it should be.
Yeah, which paradoxically is exactly the way that we get to participate in bringing about a new world, is when we're not denying the way the world is. I love, what a beautiful place to end, Lizzie. That we might practice and dedicate ourselves to unfolding, to opening as each year passes, rather than calcifying or closing or rigidifying. And as we end, I'm thinking of someone who's no longer alive, who a cousin of mine who died in her 90s, who I knew as somebody who kept on opening in her life, and that 92 was one of the most wide-eyed, curious, loving people who would ask, who would say exactly what you're saying. This is, "Tell me more, I want to understand." And our wish to, our moving to understand is always a way of making the unwanted wanted. We are letting in what we have not yet let come close.
Yeah.
So we have to end. Thank you so much, Lizzie, for you and your wise way into this, and also for bringing this poem, which I brought, but you brought, that has so much in it. And I think it's time for us to close, and I'll just say to everyone, thank you also so much for being with us and being well. We'll do this again next week.
Thank you, everybody.
Thanks, everyone. Bye-bye.